Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Yes, indeed. It is time for Movies and Booze. We are joined by Esther McCarthy, Fionnuala Jones and Linda Coogan. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Sean.
There you are. Yeah, I was good when everybody can hear me and everything. I'll start with you, Esther, because like it's has there been a bigger cinematic event this year? Is there likely to be than Blackbird?
No, I don't think so. And it's absolutely magnificent. It is so good, bad. It is such a treat. I really, really enjoyed it.
I read an article, and it was on the Hollywood Reporter about this, and they interviewed some guy who was like a big fan of, you know, The Room, that, you know, the best terrible movie ever. And there was there's a stringent set of criteria for it to get into that category. So it's not an easy feat, as I understand it.
No, it's not. And I think it has to be, unfortunately for Flatley and all involved, it has to be just this lack of knowledge or awareness that the film you think you're making is not the film that you're making.
Yes.
And that is, I think, the joy of the viewing experience of that then. And I'm not trying to be mean when I say it's so bad. Like, and if he could embrace that, if he could embrace that and get over that filmmaking disappointment, and it's not unique to Michael Flatley, let's be fair, it happens all the time. If he can embrace it, I want the sequel. Because I need to know what happens to Victor and the secret formula and whose hands it ends up in.
Is it left open? We'll do the review in a while, but is it left kind of open at the end that there might be a sequel?
I just think there's potential to bring Victor to new places.
Right, okay. Because as I understand, at the press screening, there was actual uproarious laughter going on.
Yes, there was, yeah. I couldn't make the press screening on Wednesday. I had interviews, but I went to see it this morning and I was chuckling to myself at a morning screening that was pretty quiet, actually. That wouldn't be unusual for an opening Friday for a morning screening. But I was just there going, imagine how funny this would be after a few glasses of wine. I just think it really has the makings of a cult classic.
Were there any sections in the movie that were actually intended to be funny as far as you could tell?
That's the fascination with it. I was actually, like, there were some elements of plotline and stuff. I was going, no, they can't have missed that. Like, I'll go into that later. I don't think it knows how funny it is, but I think it's there to be embraced. If only Michael Flatley could embrace it.
He as producer, he can talk to the director and the lead star and see how they all collectively feel about that. About it being funny. An evil Hugh Bonneville in I Came By. Actually, that sounds like a very intriguing prospect.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's the first major production out of Netflix's new British and Irish arm, which was established in the last couple of years. And we'll also include a film that was made here by Element Pictures later in the autumn called The Wonder. It's a period thriller starring Florence Pugh. So we've got that coming up as well. And, you can see Lindsay Lohan as a movie here. They've got the Obama series filming in West Cork. I think you're going to see a lot more production activity from Netflix in this part of the world in the next few years. And this is, who doesn't want Hugh Bonneville from Downton playing a kind of mad, evil psycho? I'm up for that. Reverse casting.
You said the Obama series is like Barack and Jackie Healy Ray go for pints or go lobster fishing. I'd pay cash money to see that. That would be
great. Actually kind of promising. It's the first Bodkin. The name was escaping me there. It's called Bodkin. It's executive produced by the Obamas under their production company for Netflix. And it's a nice prospect. It's a comedy. It's set in Ireland. And it's about a bunch of podcasters who arrive in this Irish town to try and solve a few disappearances. So I think there's potential for a bit of parody there.
Isn't that the plot of Only Murders in the Building?
I suppose it is, yeah.
Yes, except just in West Cork. Yes. From their nice apartment in West Cork. Linda, you brought in food as well as wine.
I did indeed.
Yeah,
you're
why?
Very welcome and it's amazing.
No, it does look amazing.
Between us and Nafanula.
I'm abandoned over here looking, lowering after the meat.
Where you were just sitting had like the hottest chili on earth on it like not too long ago. So
this will cool you down.
Yeah. hospital probably is the only thing that will cool you down. So what two wines are we talking about today, Linda?
Last of the summer wines, and not just because they're summer styles, but you know, they're light, fresh, easy drinking, and wines you can drink all year round, but particularly popular during the summer months. The red you can chill, and the white is just a really easy crowd pleasing style. Pickpool and Mencia are the grapes, so not every day grapes you'll hear about, but something a little bit different. And the Mencia, I think, needs a little bit of charcuterie. Beautiful ham from Ibericus.
Yeah, that is actually delicious.
I know, it's
looking
really
ham.
Amazing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Mm. So, Fionnuala Jones, well-known podcaster now, solving murders in West Cork all the time. What's the name of your podcast?
It's Flop Culture. So it's all about our favourite flops. So like movies that did really badly. Esther, you're going to have to come on and do an episode on Blackbird, I think, judging by... well, I know you haven't said the review yet, but that's the idea that I'm getting.
I am there for that.
Yeah, so it's all about, like, you know, kind of pop culture failures that people love. So someone came on and did a Bond movie on Her Majesty's Secret Service, which I'd never watched. We got into that. The first episode was about Cleese, who is an artist who is very successful in her own right, but kind of never met the scales of other pop artists. So we dug into that a bit. It's been a lot of fun.
Okay. Well, that doesn't sound flop. That sounds more like mediocre.
That's what I mean.
Really?
It's kind of,
not that
some
great.
Some of them are, and then some of them are absolute. Someone did the Lindsay Lohan movie, I Know Who Killed Me. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No.
That's capital flop, F capital, like just art house movie, but it's twins again. And I don't want to give away too much. Just if you haven't watched it, go watch it. It's an incredible, like, feat of failure. It's so good.
She's in Ireland working on another one, it seems. Brendan Gleeson's going to be in the second Joker movie.
I'm so... The more news that comes out about this, I'm more excited. So he's going to be in the Joker sequel, as you said. It's Joker, Folie à Deux, which we already know about. Joaquin Phoenix is obviously the lead. Lady Gaga is like his main squeeze. We don't think she's going to play Harley Quinn. I think that was the big question around her, because I think they really want to separate this from the actual DC universe. Like, it isn't really... It's just in the name. It's not superhero-esque. It's just, again, like a rip-off of Taxi Driver, whereas this sequel is more going to be musical, like Singing in the Rain, West Side Story. We know very little about the plot. I really want to know who Brendan Gleeson is going to play in all this. I also really want to know if Lady Gaga knows who Brendan Gleeson is. Like, has she ever seen The Guard? Has Brendan Gleeson ever listened to Art Pop? Another flop? I'm very excited about this, when initially I was kind of a bit tepid. But if two people are going to get me into the cinema to see a Joker sequel, it's Lady Gaga and Brendan Gleeson, to be honest. So
I imagine, though, she has people who will tell her who Brendan Gleeson is.
She's going to go
with
a
map and diagrams.
Yeah. I'm not going to do the accent.
This is what an Irish person looks like. This is a spud.
I loved you in In Bruges. I loved you as Mad Eye Moody, and she will just nothing upstairs.
The Guard.
Yeah.
And Paddington, don't forget.
And Paddington, of course.
He was amazing.
I feel like she's
seen
Paddington. Lady Gaga's taste. So.
Yeah, she probably has, yeah. Now, there's going to be ads now on Netflix? How's that working?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. So basically, they're introducing this ad tier so that it's like, essentially, because the prices have gone up so much, they're basically acknowledging now that there's an audience there who, like, still want to be on Netflix, still want to watch Netflix, but they can't afford the price that it is now. So they're introducing an ad tier. But what was interesting is that I didn't know this. Disney Plus are also introducing an ad tier. Now, I don't think we're going to get it over this side of the world anytime soon, but Disney Plus are introducing it over in the States, I should say, in December. And Netflix have basically moved their launch to kind of beat them for their ad tier. So I think that's coming November. So it's launching initially in Canada, the UK, France and Germany. And I think for the Disney Plus basic package, it's going to be $7.99. And I think Netflix is roughly the same. So it's going to be $6.99, $7.99 here. And it's essentially going to be, they've said, it will have an ad load of about 4 minutes per hour for series. And they'll basically set it. They're going to have like frequency caps. So you won't keep seeing like the same ad, or like it'll be able to tell how often you're seeing an ad when you're watching something on Netflix. So they're kind of the two biggest ones, I think. Now, there's a couple of other streamers catching up. So you'd wonder the rest of them going to follow suit with this ad tier.
Right. Okay. So that means you'd pay less for your Netflix subscription if you go for the ad tier.
Essentially, yes. Yeah. I made a very bad job at explaining that.
Who would go for the more expensive one, really?
Well, that's it. But there is an audience there for it. I think there are people, especially because it has gone so expensive. And, you know, if you're signing up to Netflix to watch maybe one series or one thing, that's the main criticism that Netflix has found recently, is that the content just kind of hasn't been there to keep people.
No, it hasn't been great, yeah.
So I would sign up to an ad tier if I just wanted to watch, you know, the new Selling Sunset or Stranger Things or whatever. And I'd put up with 4 minutes of ads, you know what I mean? So,
and, but the ads will all be local, presumably. And then there'll be a whole thing about what has done stores you have over there and that kind of stuff. That'd be great.
Or you listen to pharmacies in America. Can you imagine? Oh, no.
That'd be, for guns.
I love it.
That's when we buy guns in Ireland, in gun stores. Right, so, Linda, tell us about our first wine today.
Okay, so a white from the Languedoc region, which is not what you normally would expect. You'd expect some nice, big, red, robust one. So this is a grape called Picpoul de Penne. Have you heard of it?
No, not at all.
Great name, though.
Yeah. Picpoul de Penne. It just rolls off the tongue. Picpoul de Penne. Quite easy drinking style, light, sometimes has a bit of a spritz. This particular one is called Villa de Crux, C-R-O-I-X, Villa de Crux. And Picpoul de Penne is the grape, and it is lovely and fresh and light. It has some citrus notes, some lemon. What do you drink?
Yeah, it is citrusy, all right.
Yeah,
yes,
I tried some before we started, and it's very delicious. Yeah. Very
it has a kind of mineral note to it as well. And it's just really, really easy style. Can you imagine drinking that now in the garden?
Yeah.
Not that it's raining out at the moment in Dublin anyway.
I can still imagine drinking it in the garden.
Or in studio.
Don't be a wimp. Come on.
But it's a light, easy style. Like, I'm thinking daytime drinking here, you know.
Your
daytime picnic, 12% screw cap as well.
I see. That's, Bob's your sister.
But,
that's the
there's more on the body than you'd expect. It's because this particular wine has spent, it was fermented in stainless steel tanks to keep the pure fresh fruit profile, but what they did is they put it in old oak barrels for 4 months to give it texture and on its lees and give it more oomph. So this is not your typical one. It's a little bit more exciting than normal ones. But if you want the typical normal Picpoul de Penne, all you want to do is look in most really good independents, and they're popping up now a little bit in supermarkets as well. And you usually pay about 13 to 15. This is
really
creeping up to 17 because of the texture on the lees. And I
assume
it.
It's a relatively rare for here anyway.
Well, it's popping up on wine lists over the last while because you've heard of Albarino from Rhys Boicheas. Yeah. So they're running out of that because I'm recommending it too much, I think. But so we've moved to Picpoul now as a lighter kind of alternative style. So it's way more going on than a Pinot Grigio. Not as acidic.
Yeah, it's actually a Pinot Grigio with taste.
With a lot more going on. Yeah. So again, simple dishes or completely on its own with your Netflix tiered advertising package.
And that charcuterie is absolutely
delicious.
It's unreal.
As well. We'll be
happy for you.
Sorry,
I'm really happy for you.
My big dirty fingers on it. I'm so sorry. I can pass it over.
You seem reluctant to.
Okay, if you want to.
Oh,
yeah.
Delicious.
Come on, since you became a podcaster, you became very pushy altogether. Right, so we'll, Esther, we talk about Blackbird after this.
Can we just review Blackbird twice today, Sean?
Let's do that. Yeah, okay, we are going to take a break after that. Bless me, Father, I have sinned. I might sin again.
Not the man I used to be.
The Blackbird is dead.
You're the only one who can stop this. You've got to come back and fight.
When are we going to get past this?
I'll never get past this!
Just hide from the world.
Victor Blackley, I believe you have something in mind.
Who I am is none of your concern. And what I do is out of your control.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. And I'm about to sin again.
Jesus, even the trailer's funny. Okay. I must admit, I've become slightly obsessive reading articles about this, so I kind of know most of the plot now. But tell us about Victor. Is he's a retired spy? That would be Michael Flatley's character.
Yes, we see him at a funeral, at the start, and you're kind of going, why is he burying somebody, his wife, in his front garden? And then you remember poor old Ivanka Trump happened to a month ago, so let's go with this. And he's a okay. former member. He's Victor.
He's married to Ivanka Trump. Is that what you're telling us? That was.
You'll be asking a lot of questions throughout this movie, believe me. He's Victor Blackley. Do you get it, Sean? Blackley? Mm-hmm. Blackbird?
Yes.
An MI6 operative. He decides to quit because the mission, now we learned this in flashback later, a mission he's involved in goes drastically wrong and leads to the death of the love of his life. And we know it's a really sad funeral because there's kind of Angela's Ashes type rain falling, plummeting in the opening scene of the film.
They're the worst, yeah.
And so he decides to set up a new life for himself, shun spying for once and for all, and has become the owner of this glitzy place in Barbados, a fancy hotel that's become popular with criminal gangs. Thankfully, he didn't call it Rick's Cafe. He called it the Blue Moon.
Okay.
But after some years in this business, he's shown reluctantly now, Sean, pulled back into the world of international espionage.
That never happens in the movies. That's so unique.
Because Eric Roberts, who is... Like, if Eric Roberts could just embrace maniacal baddie and say it like they do in the Muppets movie, he could not be more of a villain here. He is a former spy. He's part of a secret organisation. And we know that there is a secret organisation because they all wear the same secret organisation rings on their fingers. And he has, this is all true, he has access, right, to this secret formula, and it's called a secret formula, that can enhance the immune systems of people all over the world.
Cool.
But if you tweak it, it can kill everybody.
Okay, that's not good.
And have the opposite effect. So you do not want this thing in the wrong hands. I was hoping for a vial of potion or something, but it looks kind of like a mini disc.
Okay.
And that's kind of the idea. So Blackley is kind of urged to get back into the tuxedo and go Bond and get the secret formula out of the hands of some very bad people.
Right. Okay.
So it's complicated by the fact that the villain of the piece is now going out with an actress named Vivian, or a character named Vivian, played by Nicole Evans, who's frightfully posh. You know she's not really happy with him, Sean, even though they're going to get engaged, because she asks him, like, should I wear the yellow dress or the red dress tonight? And he says, I'm not really interested. And she looks really sad into the distance.
That's not a great sign, is it? Yeah.
So it's not, you kind of instinctually know maybe this isn't the right guy for her, you know. And she has previous with Victor. We find out she has previous with Victor. And she is the key, I suppose, to working with Victor and helping him find the secret formula that could enhance or destroy the immune systems of people throughout the world. And there's just this one really funny... You know, when you asked me was it intentionally funny or not, and I said I wasn't quite sure, there's actually... Vivian's character is... she's been with Eric Roberts' villain for 5 years, right?
Mm.
She doesn't know anything about the secret organisation where they all wear the same secret organisation rings on their fingers. She knows nothing about the fact that he has access to a secret formula. And we find out halfway through that she was a spy. She used to be a spy.
She was because she wasn't really living it up to her, you know.
And you know how she finds out about the formula? It's in a suitcase in the bed, unlocked on the top of a suitcase on the bed.
Rookie mistake. Yeah.
In the room with the person she's lived with for the last 5 years.
Right. Okay.
So I had so much fun with this in terms of plausibility. It's great fun. I mean, you've heard about all the young ones, I think. Probably there's more young ones hanging around in scenes looking pretty than you'd find at Leo DiCaprio's girlfriend's 25th birthday party, really. Yeah. And, you know, the hats are magnificent. He wears a fedora, a flat cap at one stage, changes from a fedora to a flat cap in the same scene for reasons I will never understand. And I need a Best Supporting Hat category at the Oscars. I need a sequel. I have to say, like, I'm not doing this to be willfully cruel. It's, you know, Michael Flatley, the director, actor, producer and star of this film and writer.
Oh, he wrote it too. All right.
He wrote it too. Yeah, Dance Lord Productions, his production company, produced. And I'm not being cruel when I say, like, it is so not the film you wanted to make, but I want to see it more. And I hope all involved can embrace it, because you know what? The ultimate thing is you want movies to make people happy. And this made me laugh.
Yeah.
And this was a tonic. Yeah.
This sounds a bit like, you know, the airplane movies. Like the original airplane movie was a ripoff of real airplane disaster movies. And all you had to do to make it funny was just nudge it just a little bit. And this is what this sounds like.
The trick, though. You have to just nudge it a little bit. You can't go into the next one being all, oh, ho, ho, we're all ironic and stuff.
Because
then you're going to lose the unaware of what kind of movie we are making, magic.
Is there much, for a movie that's like slightly Bond and slightly Casablanca, are there any action sequences in it? Is there like, you know, is he kicking ass?
No, a lot less. Well, until the end, until the finale, a lot less than you would be led to expect from the trailer. But sure, that's what trailers do. You know what I mean? Mm. So a lot of it's just drama, hammy lines, cliches, things that make no sense. I just loved it. I loved it, I have to say. And I didn't expect to, because I've been stung before.
Mm.
Remember when you guys all watched the trailer for Wild Mountain Time and you were all like so excited, and I was the idiot who had to actually go and watch it.
Yeah.
And warned you that I am the person who sees them, so you don't have to. Like, I'm recommending this one. I think it's hard for something to
The funny thing is, a lot of reviewers are, I haven't come across any review yet that's been just outright, this is awful. They're like, everyone's not, it's not even like they're trying to be kind. It's like, it's awful, but you know, it's fun. That's a weird thing. Do you think it'll actually do a bit of business now?
I think you'll find it'll do, I think it'll do the Tommy Wiseau audience. I think, you know, Room, that great bad film that has become an absolute cult classic and even had a film made about it. A couple of years ago, which is really funny if you haven't seen it, by the way. I think this is, if I was a programmer in a cinema, I would be putting this on at 11 o'clock. I'd be making sure the bar was open for a couple of hours beforehand. And I think that is, you know, as I said, I watched this in a very quiet movie theatre this morning, and I can only imagine what a collective ripple of laughter going around at some of these incidences would create for an audience. I think
no one wants to know, is it as bad as Grease 2?
Oh God! Actually, there was a whole list of bad films emerging from a review that Mark Kermode put up this morning, which is great. He's always great, but he was putting up names of bad films. This is the worst film I've ever seen, and I saw, which created a brilliant chain of replies of bad films ever. And I think the best for me is They Stole Hitler's Brain. I want to see that now, even though it's a terrible spoiler of a title, I have to say.
Yeah. You'd hope there's some other plot development past that. Yeah.
Fionnuala, sure. I'm there for the podcast, by the way.
Yeah.
Esther sold
me ideas.
As long
as we can do a special on They Stole Hitler's Brain.
Yeah. Someone has to do Grease 2 as well. I love Grease 2.
There you go.
I can't even remember Grease 2.
You see, that's a whole new thing, a podcast.
I just remember that song, and he's on the bike, he's like, who's that guy? That's Grease 2, isn't it? So good. Anyway.
I don't know.
Classic. Sean's like, no idea.
It was from my memory.
It wasn't Sandy and Danny, though, was it?
No, it was two
completely different actors.
For some reason.
It was like two 35-year-olds pretending they were in high school, kind of thing. Right, okay, well, Esther's going to appear on Fionnuala's podcast. You have a podcast, Esther.
No, I have one in my brain, but I've done absolute dibbly squid to organise it or do anything about it. But
okay,
I do have one in my brain.
Linda has a podcast as well.
Like,
so it's like National
like
Podcast Day. What's the name of your podcast, Linda?
My podcast is called, well, not mine, it's myself and my really good friend Antonia Dominguez. Wine the Long and the Short of It. Because I am vertically challenged. The 4'10" area, and she is around a foot taller than me. So that's one part of the name, and the other part is because we can talk about a lot in a short space of time, or we can get into detail and give you the long version of it. So it's for wine consumers, trying to help them to debunk all the wine myths, and we've 5 episodes there, so you can binge watch it like a whole series on Netflix, and we are just really excited to get it launched and out there. This has been faster. So there's time for you. We've had a year to ponder this, and we tried to do videos that didn't really work out too well. So we said we'd get behind the mic and see how it went. So we're delighted.
Yeah, it's harder to imply tallness or shortness, you know, just in a podcast hourly.
Well, you see, you need
unless
to
you have
her.
Like she's echoing down at you, and you're going hello.
our artwork is our silhouettes back to back. You see, so
yeah,
and we're having
okay.
some wine, so it's a bit of crack, you know.
Right,
so yeah, wine. The long and the short of it, you can get it everywhere. Thanks.
Where can I buy Muscat in Ireland? Somebody wants to know.
Muscat, yeah. So there is one domain, Delanoe, and that would be widely available in Independence for about 14, 15 euro, Muscat Surly. So again, a little bit of texture to that one. That would be the most popular one that'll be out there. McInway Wines import that. So again, Pickpool de Penne would be a similar style, but this particular one would be a little bit more complex. I'm still getting the length of that wine. Like that's still lemony to me, bursting in lemon. So I'm really liking that. Just, I forgot to say where you can get it. Independence, but you can pick it up. I picked up Boat Wines in Sweeney's D3. But again, there's a long list. Baggot Street, Black Rock Cellars, D6, The Corkscrew around the corner, Jeux de Vin, 64 Wines, and The Wine Pair as well. So
okay. Well done. In one review for Blackbird, the reviewer compared Victor Blackley to Poochie the dog. Whenever Poochie's not on screen, all the other characters will be asking, where is he? And apparently tomorrow, September the 3rd, is World Cinema Day. So at a participating cinema, Michael Flatley's Blackbird will be only €4 per person, laughs and value, says another text. So that's something to keep in mind. Now, this is an example of just how insane social media. Lea Michele had to then do an interview, this woman, to say, like, she's an actor. It's, like, inherent in the job. You have to be able to read stuff to kind of say, no, I'm not illiterate.
Okay, look, that's not the only reason why she did the interview, I will say.
Well, I know, but
she's about to debut in Funny Girl on Broadway, which is a role that she's been coveting for as long as anyone has been familiar with Lea Michele. But there has been, so she's been doing a lot of interviews, obviously, to promote that and also there's a bit of course correction for her. She's obviously gotten this role, but more recently she's kind of faced, you know, allegations of on-set bullying from people from her time on Glee. So this casting has kind of been a bit controversial. She took over from Beanie Feldstein and there was a lot of drama around that. But anyway, course correction, as I said. So she was sitting down with The New Yorker, I think, and they were talking about her and taking over this role, whatever. And there was this meme that's basically started and this rumour around Michelle around the fact that she supposedly can't read, right? And like, it was a bit of fun. It's not, you know, poking anything at like illiteracy or anything like that. It was just this mad thing that started. Her former Glee star, the late Naya Rivera, had written in her memoir that Michelle refused to improv on set. And these podcasts host made a joke about how she must not be able to read. Like, that's why she doesn't improv, because she can't read the scripts, right? It literally came from there, demented.
Yeah,
I think innocent. I think all in good fun, right? And I think she could have embraced this with a nod and a wink, and it actually would have stood to her, given that she's already faced like quite serious allegations. But anyway, she didn't. She's done this interview. She was asked about it in the interview, like, basically, can you read? And she had to come out and say,
they were holding up flashcards and say, what does that say?
Like an eye test. But she went on to say, it's this answer, I think, where she falls down on whatever would come out being like, you know, exasperated, being like, yes, of course I can read. But she basically tried to blame it on misogyny, which that's not what it was. But anyway, she said, I went to Glee every single day. I knew my lines every single day. And then there's a rumour online that I can't read or write. It's sad. It really is. I think often if I were a man, a lot of this wouldn't be the case. So there you go. Lea Michele can read.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Okay. But that's only because she's a woman.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's weird. Now, scary Winnie the Pooh.
Scary Winnie the Pooh.
No, don't tell me.
Yeah.
I can see it actually, weirdly enough.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer, this is for Blood and Honey. So basically the whole thing is Winnie the Pooh, the story has like entered the public domain. So like other people can take the story now and do their own. I don't fully understand that, but some
after
other people
50,
do.
After the copyright runs
they can,
out.
Yeah, they can take the story and do a spin on it. So these people have taken a story in which it's like a slasher kind of horror, and we got our first full trailer this week for Blood and Honey. But it's essentially, okay, so Christopher Robin has outgrown his toys. He's left the 100 Acre Wood, you know, he's gone to be an adult, obviously, and the toys are obviously depressed at this.
Yeah.
And in his absence, you know, they're growing resentful. They start feasting on the forest animals for sustenance while plotting to wreak like revenge on Christopher Robin whenever he comes back and the 100 Acre Wood. It's, the trailer is just so mad because it's these guys, you know, it's, it just kind of seems like a home invasion movie as opposed to anything else. You have these guys who are in, they're adult humans, but they're wearing like the Winnie the Pooh mask, the Piglet mask. But like already Rolling Stone has called it like childhood ruining. Like it's so violent. It's so grim. Linda is cackling here. She cannot wait to see this.
I'd be terrified. Imagine watching something
like
that.
Yeah, that would be scary.
It seems genuinely quite scary. I'm very intrigued, but it looks... Yeah, haunting.
I'd rather
haunting.
Blackbird over that now,
yeah,
I think.
Same. Let's all go to see Blackbird instead and not have nightmares.
After wine.
Victor Blackley would kick their asses. Right. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We do have to take a break. More movies and booze after this. Right, Linda, let's move on to our second wine. I just had a sip of this. This is absolutely lovely.
Yay. And make sure you have some of the beautiful charcuterie as well. So this is a grape called Mencia. M-E-N-C-I-A, from a region in Spain called Bierzo, B-I-E-R-Z-O. Lesser known, but popping up now on lots of wine lists around the place, especially kind of wine bars. It doesn't need food, but this is a young style. So this is, some of them when they're a little bit more aged are much more complex. So this is a hoven, meaning it's a youthful style. So it's meant to be drunk, young and enjoyed just on its own. And the profile that you get from this is kind of violets and cherries and kind of tart fruit, but a floral note as well, which sounds a bit odd when you're talking about wine and flowers, but it just works and it's really balanced. So it's not like anything else really. Except
no,
for grape, maybe
not.
Like Petit Verdot, which you don't really see on its own, would be the closest thing. So for me, it's not that high in alcohol. It's only 13.5, which is nothing.
So
course.
This is a breakfast wine, really, essentially.
Yeah, like the water we had earlier on, the pig pool was only 12. Yeah. So this is, you know, but for a Spanish, it's known as kind of the green Spain. So it's... less in your face fruit. It's kind of more restrained, and this is a kind of stepping stone for the Mencia grape. It's made by a fabulous winemaker who is like wow in Spain, Raúl Pérez. P-E-R-E-Z. I spell everything because I can't pronounce things properly.
No, that's good. Yeah.
He is like this iconic winemaker, and he's just amazing. So this is like one of his little babies. And I just think it's a nice entry level grape style into Mencia. You're not going to get this in the supermarkets. You will get it in the independents, and this is kind of the starting point for it. There are lots of other ways that you can explore this grape, but you are talking that you definitely need food. It, you know,
oh,
this
yeah.
is, it's pleasant
absolutely.
On its own,
yeah,
but if you
absolutely.
Eat it, that's why I purposely brought in that charcuterie.
Yeah, it's just don't want to inflict the sound of me chewing on the listeners. That's less than pleasurable for
it's,
people.
It's not filtered or refined, so it's as organic and natural as you kind of can, you know, for this kind of, I suppose, level, it's really authentic and kind of as pure as it can be. I really think this is cracking little wine for somebody who's even experimenting with different type of grapes. This is Mencia would be definitely one to try.
Yeah, and it is. Yeah, and it's actually so refreshing when you taste a red wine and it's distinctly different to other red wines.
Like this has a freshness and is lively compared to like a big full rich, you know, Rioja or Bordeaux or something, or even heavier. So this is why I have it last in the summer wine. But it's a red wine style that even, you know, people sampling into reds could try, but it's lovely. But it does need to be open a little bit of time as well. And I definitely would say try it with a bit of hard cheese or some charcuterie and you're onto a winner. So again, it is about the €16, but I think it delivers a lot more in terms of the flavour profile and that. Hand-picked stainless steel, natural yeast, 3 months in old oak barrels. And as I said, it is no filtered refining, so it's as natural as it can be, and it's suitable for vegans as well.
Yeah.
So don't have your charcuterie with that.
Okay, obviously if you're a vegan. What's normally in a wine that a vegan can't
You see,
have?
This is, you see, people listen to the podcast and you'll find all about this. But in a nutshell, basically you can use egg whites to fine and clarify wine. Or eyes and glass, which is the guts of a fish, to clarify them. Yeah, so they're not like in tiny, minuscule quantities, but
it's there. Yeah.
It's there. So this is a vegan or
okay. And so what are they? Did they find it at all?
Bentonite. Sorry, a clay. Called bentonite, so it does the same job. So you've seen that more and more on labels where it'll say it's a vegan friendly wine. Yeah.
So mud, basically. They poured it through a load of mud.
All the little particles attract to the mud and takes anything, all the bits out.
Well, that's kind of clever. Kevin says Grease 2 has Michelle Pfeiffer in it. And she was the only good thing in it. That's true. Michelle Pfeiffer in the old leather trousers. That takes it out of the terrible movie category for
of
me.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't remember the male lead. It's wrecking my head.
How can
she's
you not?
So good in this.
Because they were never heard from again, whoever the male lead was, I'm guessing.
True.
Peter says Blackbird was brilliant. Ireland's answer to Batman. He turns in a performance only second to Keiko in Free Willy, deserves an Oscar nod or the Nobel Peace Prize. So it's all there to play for Michael Flatley. Right, so Ally McBeal is coming back?
Yes, but not as we know it. Calista Flockhart has not signed on yet. It's coming from ABC.
She's still
in the
married
States.
To your man.
Harrison Ford,
yeah. I think so.
Yeah. ABC are reviving it. It's going to be a new focus on. It's actually going to be the daughter of Ali's old roommate, Renee Reddick, for anyone who, or Reddick even, who joins the same Boston law firm. She, as I said, Calista Flockhart has not signed on. She's waiting to see a script before agreeing to it. But the show's original creator, David E. Kelly, has given his blessing. The new writer is Karen Gist, who has worked on Grey's Anatomy. I kind of didn't realise, well, like I did and I didn't, but it's only when you see it down on paper, like how successful it actually was. You know, won an Emmy for Outstanding Comedy Series in 1999, launched the careers of loads of people, Lucy Liu, Jane Krakowski, revived Robert Downey Jr.'s career. So will be interesting to see. I'm kind of, we have the reboot conversation so often. This I'm like less mad about, I suppose, because it did end in 2002. Like, I feel like that's enough time to kind of bring something back, perhaps. Like, this
maybe
new
it is,
out.
But it was very much of its time then. Now, it was huge for a period, absolutely.
Yeah.
But
I think they're trying to focus this on that it's a bit more diverse. So I think the main character is going to be a black woman and follow her journey and everything like that. I don't know. Like, we'll see. I'm sure fans will watch anyway out of intrigue. I'm sure they'll get Calista Flockhart to do something, even if it's just a cameo. I'm sure they'll cough up the few bobs that she probably wants and needs.
Has she been in anything since Ally McBeal?
I don't think so.
No, I'm open to correction on that, but definitely nothing kind of major since.
Yeah. I wonder, did she just give up or she just couldn't get anything because she was just Ally McBeal?
That's who she was, exactly.
And yeah, potentially.
David E. Kelly, the producer or director, he's married to Michelle Pfeiffer.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, God. There,
sorry,
there
you
go.
I know.
Everything, there was 6 degrees of separation from everything. Yeah. We are all.
It's like West Cork. Everyone's related to everybody else.
Truly.
Better check that fact now before I put it out there.
I know. It's absolute fact.
Yeah.
We'll go to the High Court with that one. Right. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is I Came By. Here's a clip.
I broke into that judge's house. You know, the guy you flagged months ago. And when I got in there, I saw. I don't know what I saw. No, will you just listen to me for a minute? No need to go mental. We said if I wanted to keep writing, I could.
Yes, yes, and I told you to keep me out of it. Look, whatever mess you got yourself in, yeah, it's not my problem. You're on your own.
There you go. That's I Came By. Apparently, Calista Flockhart was in The Penguins of Madagascar on TV, FaceTiming with Mummy on TV, Feud on TV, and Supergirl on TV. All performances we warmly remember. Right. Blackbird Esther. I Came By. Sorry. I just wanted to do it again. What's wrong with me? Sorry, I Came By. Sorry.
Take an hour of drive time and do like a whole thesis and analysis and breakdown. And anyway, yeah, I Came By. So this is a British thriller, as I said, by, the first on a new slate from Netflix out of this part of the world. And it's a British Iranian filmmaker by the name of Babak Anvari, who's known for kind of real indie cinema, but also kind of having political statements in his work. And he's kind of stepping up here with a cast, big name cast, which includes Hugh Bonneville, George McKay, who was so good in 1917, I'd watch that man in anything, and Kelly MacDonald, who is just knocking it out the park at everything she does at the moment. And it's based around Hugh Bonneville plays Sir Hector Blake. It's a powerful, conceited member of the judiciary. He's now known for his work with refugees, and he's a former High Court judge. But he really has a sense of entitlement and a sense of expectation that comes with that entitlement. So there's a young rebel activist by the name of Toby, who's played by George MacKay, who suspects he's corrupt. And he has a thing going where he is a graffiti artist, and he likes to, he kind of sees himself, I suppose, as this modern day cutting edge Robin Hood, even though he, you know, lives with his mother. And he's kind of trying to, he breaks into the houses of these people and writes graffiti all over their house saying, "I know what you're at," basically. And that, you know, he knows what they're up to. And he tries to expose them or give them the heebie-jeebies in that way. He used to have a partner in crime who no longer wants to do it. He wants to be a grown-up. So Toby goes it alone one day on his visit to Blake's home. And because he's never seen a horror film in his adult life, Sean, he goes down to the basement of Blake's home, where he makes an absolutely shocking discovery. I'll say no more than that. But suffice to say, you'll know from the trailers or the posters that Hugh Bonneville is going full nasty here. He's playing a nasty piece of work. And I suppose what this works to a degree. I think it wants to have something really, really serious to say politically. And I can understand a British filmmaker living in Britain at the moment wanting to say do a horror that has something to say about corruption, for sure. But I think ultimately this works really well as a potboiler. It throws twists at its audience in mostly fun ways. I don't think the film's political messages land as well, but I did like... It gave me the jitters a few times, this, actually.
Okay.
There's some proper tense filmmaking. And it is, yeah, it's a good cast here making the most of an interesting concept. So it's a horror psychological thriller. Leave the politics aside. It doesn't really work. It's there on your Netflix tonight.
And is Hugh Bonneville scary? Today. Does he do good scary?
I think he does. And I've seen some criticism of him in other reviews. But I actually think he's using that slightly... I think he's gone a little bit meta in a kind of a fun and interesting way, in that he's using that kind of slightly hamminess that the Downton fans are going to kill me. You know, there's a slight hamminess to the Downton delivery. And I think he's brought that in here to try and deceive people as to what he really is. And I think that's actually kind of fun. I like that.
Right. OK, that's not bad then. Susan and Kilkenny and a rake of other people actually texted in to say that the male lead in Grease 2 was Maxwell Caulfield.
Of course,
Maxwell Caulfield.
Maxwell, I know him well.
Obviously, that was the high point of his career. Went on to do a lot of TV, most of it with Calista Flockhart, as it turned out. Esther, thanks a million. That was Esther McCarthy, there, film reviewer. I was joined in the studio by the twin podcasters, Fionnuala Jones and Linda Coogan. That's our lot for today.
Moncrief.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.